WA podcast from William Hill. Listen to the podcast at williamhill.com/podcast.
Yeah, welcome along to the FWA podcast. Once again, every week we get one of the leading football writers to have a chat with us about the burning issues in the game. This week, delighted to say that the chief football correspondent with the Times, Ollie Kay, has joined us on the line. Hi, Ollie. You well?
Hello, you okay?
Yeah, you looking forward to the international weekend? I asked this to everyone and no one's given me a positive answer yet.
Oh, I am. I'm looking forward to Estonia, England. I mean, it's a nice place to go for one thing, but yeah, I think there's a... I think there's a reasonable level of excitement about the new England. I'm not claiming people are getting as carried away with it as they perhaps were 10, 15 years when Beckham, Gerrard, Lampard, Scholes era were coming through. But, you know, there are some exciting young players. It's interesting to see how England develops. So, yes, of course I'm looking forward to it. I hope everyone else is.
Yeah. One of the interesting things, we're not going to talk about it in much depth, but one thing that I thought is interesting is, obviously with San Marino coming to town, as we record this tonight, Rooney's got a great chance to at least equal Jimmy Greaves' goal tally, and he's not very far off being the all-time top goal scorer for England. But then when I look at that list, it strikes me he probably won't be remembered in quite as much of a... in quite the same way as Bobby Charlton or Gary Lineker or Jimmy Greaves even. It's funny, isn't it? What an achievement when he gets there.
Well, it is, but if you look at the way... if you look throughout Europe in particular, where there are so many games against weaker teams, if you look at modern football, a lot of the record holders are modern players. I mean, would you say Robin van Persie is a better player than Marco van Basten was? I don't think many would particularly argue that. Zlatan Ibrahimovic, he's the Swedish record holder. You could argue he's the best Swedish player of all time, but Miroslav Klose.
Yeah, true.
Is he better than Gerd Müller? Is he better than Rummenigge? Obviously, he has a great record at World Cups, but often they've been against smaller teams at World Cups. So I think generally it has become easier to score a lot of goals at international level in this era, particularly for European players, particularly if you're playing, perhaps half of your qualifiers against. If not a San Marino or a Liechtenstein, then maybe an Estonia or a Kazakhstan, whatever. Teams that aren't going to put up much resistance and teams that are easy to rack up goals against. I could imagine someone like Jimmy Greaves getting rather mad at the idea of being losing his place at number three, but you can only play the area you're in, can't you?
Yeah, and it's funny you should mention Greaves in particular because his record, 44 goals in 57 games. I mean, that's some going, isn't it? You look at the likes of Nat Loftus as well, 13-33. I mean, Rooney's got to 41 in 97 caps. So Bobby Charlton, to be fair, he did his in 106 caps. So, it's still a fantastic achievement. Let's hope he gets a few on the way during the San Marino match. One of the things that I wanted to talk about today, Ollie, was it links English football and the foreign game. This 39th, or now the 38th game, the international game, you wrote about it in the Times this week. I read the piece. Very interesting. There's lots of nuances to this as well. What's your take on it? Do you think it's a good idea, first of all?
I really don't think it's a good idea. No, I can hear people when they say, it's a global game these days, it's a global brand, we should be taking English football around the world. And I agree with that. And I agree with the, these extremely lucrative pre-season tours that clubs go on. And I've been on a few and I've thought that, they're great events. Great events for the people in, Hong Kong and Japan and America and so on. And they have an obvious appeal. I wouldn't be averse to taking a community shield abroad.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be averse to them expanding the Premier League Asia Trophy that they've got and making that into some kind of, cross Premier League huge pre-season event, which maybe takes place across different territories and in July, August, and flogging the brand that way. But I've got to say, taking Premier League games abroad, not for me. I know people somehow, some people will say, well, the thing that matters is that it would make the competition unbalanced and, 19 home games versus 18 home games, etc. But my view is that league football is meant to take place in that country. And I know the NFL do it differently. I know the NFL play games at Wembley. They even talk of an NFL franchise in London. But, you know, the NFL don't have anything like the sort of same sense of integrity of competition and balance of competition that that European league football has. Obviously, they have things like the salary cap and the draft, which makes it very balanced. But you know, the league structure is nothing like the same. They don't take identity, you know, local identity, franchises. It's a completely different model. And for the idea that English football might just take what I consider one of the worst aspects of the NFL model is pretty unappealing.
Yeah, and I suppose the main reasons for doing it, again, the obviously global branding equals pound signs, basically, and the same for the NFL franchise at Wembley, you know, to move England around the country, which isn't the worst idea in the world, but the only reason they would have an NFL franchise at Wembley, surely, is because of how lucrative it would be, and you would have sell-out crowds every single week at games played at Wembley.
Yeah, it would be. I mean, it just seems that we're in a spell at the moment where the people who are in control of football, by which I mean clubs, by which I mean, you know, the people at FIFA, people at UEFA, people at Premier League, people at UEFA, they just seem to be desperate to change everything, to revolutionise the game and to manipulate it in such a way that, you know, we just get locked into the current hierarchy, whether it's, you know, financial fair play, whether it's this idea of B teams and League Three, whether it's Premier League games abroad. And I just think, you know, stop. if you're telling me that the current lot of Premier League owners, many of whom I would question as to their priorities, and many of whom I would say perhaps don't even have a vision for their own club, never mind a vision for, you know, English football or an understanding of English football, I don't think these are the people that should be deciding to separate from whatever it is 126 years of history and just rip up the English Football League system as we know it, as it's worked since 1888.
Yeah, no, I think those are a couple of the ideas that you mentioned at the start there about, you know, maybe taking specific games abroad. I think the Community Shield would be a perfect example, wouldn't it? You could take that to a different country every year if you so wished and still get that branding. I suppose, you know, what's happened is that they've seen those, is it 103,000 people turning out to watch Real Madrid, Manchester United, and obviously the pound signs or dollar signs have been ringing in people's ears and eyes. The betting on the next manager to leave their job market was stoked up again this week, Ollie. It's not a particularly pleasant market, if I'm being honest, because it's someone's job. I always feel a little bit reluctant to discuss this, but it's one of the things that football fans seem to really enjoy looking at, and the media as well. Harry Redknapp was gambled in earlier in the week into 2-1 on. He was around the kind of 2-1 mark, which means Alan Pardew is now the second favourite after being, you know, an almost unbackable price, 10 days ago, even less than that, maybe. It is a bit of a crazy one, this. You know, you can get the ticker can go on Sky Sports News, or a source has told a Sky Sports News reporter something, and these markets shift. So there's not, you don't have to believe too much into them. But Harry Redknapp, I suppose he is maybe walking a bit of a tightrope, because they're obviously used to getting rid of managers if they need to at QPR. And despite the good job he did in getting them to the Premier League, the season couldn't have started much worse, could it?
I like Harry Redknapp. I think he did a fantastic job at Tottenham. I think, you know, with certain caveats, I would say he did a fantastic job at Portsmouth. But I don't think he's done. I think if you look at his record at QPR, and I do like him, I think people are, you know, he polarises opinion in a strange way, and people seem to think that all the journalists love him, and it's just some kind of Harry and Fleet Street love affair. It isn't like that. Harry has done an extremely good job in his career, but I just don't see it since he's gone to QPR. I mean, I would understand and sympathise with him over that relegation, because he took over a team that was going nowhere. It was in complete disarray. He didn't turn it around, but I don't think he's at any point turned it around. I mean, you say he did a good job getting them up. I thought given the squad that he had, given the changes that they made going into last season in the Championship, getting out a lot of the sort of bad apples, bringing in a lot of experienced and expensive players who should have been in a position to make QPR walk that league. I think if you look at QPR scraping up through the playoffs and then starting the season with four points from seven games, and you know they're not playing well. A lot of the time when I see them, they look completely disorganised. They don't look fit. They don't look motivated. I think it is understandable why Harry Redknapp's position would come under serious scrutiny. And it was a very strange situation a few weeks ago where he and Tony Fernandez were talking openly about a new 3-year contract, and Fernandez was saying on Twitter, "Oh, I've had Harry's a great guy. He's a great manager. You know, we're going to get a horse together. You know, he's going to get a new contract. All this kind of thing." And I just thought, well, why? Because it doesn't seem like QPR are moving in a particularly good direction, either under Fernandez or under Redknapp. And why would you rush into that? And sure enough, it now seems that 3-year contract has been forgotten about for the time being, and it sounds like, you know, they're having a rethink. So it wouldn't surprise me at all if that leads to a parting of the ways ultimately. I mean, I don't necessarily think it would be anytime soon. It might be at the end of the season or something like that. But it's hard to make a case at the moment, as with Pardew at Newcastle, really, to say that Redknapp is taking QPR on the right direction. I mean, over the course of a year, really. I mean, you could say almost since Steve McLaren left early last season, or midway through last season, you know, they've been drifting. And I know they got promoted with a last-minute goal at Wembley, but you know, they have not looked like a team that's particularly going in the right direction. And that should concern Redknapp. It should concern Fernandez and everybody to do with QPR.
Yeah, so, and those statements that Harry Redknapp made at the weekend about the lack of fitness in the pre-season, very worrying. I mean, you look at the next few fixtures as well, Ollie. They've got to Liverpool at home when the Premier League resumes on the Sunday, Aston Villa at home, Chelsea away, Man City at home, and then they've got Newcastle away. So, you know, maybe expect to get something from that. But, you know, that's a pretty torrid run for the next few. Maybe Villa apart. You know, they're very, very tough games that they've got coming up. So they could remain rooted to the bottom of the Premier League coming into like late November, early December, and then they really would be worried, wouldn't they?
They would be. I mean, it's I think, you know, there are various things you would say mitigation. I mean, they are still paying the price for, you know, not just one bad summer transfer wise under Mark Hughes, but I mean, they've bought badly pretty much every transfer window over the past whatever it is 3 years since Fernandez arrived. I think he. Fernandez has never really worked out what he wants, and he's got this great long-term vision about the stadium and what QPR are going to be in 10 years' time. But I don't think he's surrounded himself with good enough sort of football acumen to get to that point where you can see QPR moving in the right direction. I can understand why Harry's wanted to make the changes that he's made and so on, but I just feel like the whole club really seems to lack a football vision, and I don't know what they'd do if they get mired in relegation trouble. Yeah. Even you know, after 12 games or whatever, they're still at the bottom and getting cut adrift. I mean, would they sack Redknapp or would they just think, well, better the devil you know, because he hasn't, you know, Fernandez's appointments haven't particularly worked so far. I mean, it seems to be one of those clubs, and they happen every now and again, often in the Championship, where every manager who goes there as a good manager comes out with their reputation damaged, because it, you know, the whole club itself looks unmanageable. So, difficult situation for QPR.
Yeah, you're not kidding. Yeah, odds on to go down now with William Hill already. It's very early in the season, of course. Let's have a look at the Premier League as it stands right now. It's a good opportunity when the internationals come round to have a quick look at where the table lies and who's in pole position. It's hard to argue against Chelsea winning the title. I mean, you can argue against them winning it. I think City have got an easier running coming to the end of the season. They've still got to play Chelsea if they hang on to their coattails and, you know, and manage to beat them at Stamford Bridge, which seems unlikely at the moment. Then, you know, the gap might not be that much. But Chelsea look very, very strong, Ollie, don't they, in every position, and they've obviously probably got the best manager in the Premier League as well.
Yeah, they weren't quite perfect last season, were they?
No.
There were various things they lacked. They lacked a goal scorer. I think they lacked a bit of the real fluency in midfield. I think Mourinho was sort of still feeling his way back into English football, and I almost feel, looking at it, like it seemed to suit him a little bit to finish third and have something to build on. I don't think it's part of any grand plan to finish third and build on it. But I think it would perhaps have given a slightly false impression of where Chelsea were last season in terms of the composition of the squad. I think going into this season, I think Fabregas has made a huge difference. I think he's been the midfield player that they've perhaps lacked over the past few years. I think Costa's made a huge difference as well. And Courtois, obviously he got injured last Sunday, but it seems to have been a fairly seamless transition from Petr Cech, which shows just how good he is. The back four is extremely solid. The two screening midfielders are generally solid, even if it's Fabregas in there alongside Matic. And Hazard, showed on Sunday that he's back in the mood again after a slow finish to last season. Again, if you look at the start that they've had, I mean, Manchester City have probably had a tougher start fixture-wise, and I think it was predictable back in August that they wouldn't necessarily be the quickest out of the blocks by this stage of the season. But Chelsea, and they've beaten Arsenal, they've drawn at Man City, they've won at Everton. They've got some good points. Chelsea, it's not as if they're in flat track bully mode. They showed those two games, Manchester City away and Arsenal at home, I think they've shown that they are capable of getting points in the big games as well. And he would always back a Mourinho team to do that. So I thought going to the start of the season, I had City as very, very slight favourites to finish above Chelsea. And I just think by dint of having, I think perhaps by this stage I would have expected Chelsea to be marginally ahead because of that easier start and the tougher start that Man City have had. But the reality is that they're 5 points clear of City. And I think for that reason, and the fact that you've not got Touré perhaps firing on all cylinders for City, and I would say Chelsea's slight favourites now.
Yeah, Manchester City around the 11-4 mark. So if you still hold that view that City can overhaul them come the end of the season, then it's a decent price. What about the top four? I mean, the way the bookmakers have got this, Chelsea and Man City are already in the top four. They're 100-1 on and 250-1 on. Arsenal are then third in the betting, with Manchester United at 4-9, and then Liverpool, the first team, odds against at 11-10. Tottenham 7-2. You would imagine, I mean, Arsenal tend to do it. I mean, the injury to Ozil now and the injury to Ramsey as well, obviously issues for them. I think Arteta's also picked up a knock as well. So, the players are dropping by the wayside. What would be your top four? It doesn't have to be in the right order, Ollie, but who would you say would be in the top four come the end of the season?
I'm afraid I'm going to have to be really boring and go with those odds. I think that they sound about right. I think Chelsea and Man City will battle it out for title. I would say perhaps Arsenal third if they keep their best players fit, and I would say Manchester United fighting with Liverpool and maybe Tottenham for fourth. But and at the moment, with Liverpool not gelling, with Manchester United beginning perhaps to gel, I wouldn't go overboard, because it's I think they, if we're talking about fixtures again, I think they've had a pretty gentle start, and they've got 3 wins now. There's a sign that they're beginning to find a way. I still have concerns about their defence, but I would perhaps say Manchester United just slightly fancy them to finish in the top four now. Yeah. But you'd expect that, wouldn't you?
I suppose. I'm a Liverpool Europe as well. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that is an advantage for United. I mean, obviously, it's not an advantage generally when teams aren't in the Champions League, but when you are spending more money than everybody else when you're not in the Champions League, then that disadvantage disappears, doesn't it, really?
Yes, yeah, indeed, yeah. And neither Tottenham in Europe as well, and they could go quite deep into Europe, you'd imagine, couldn't you? Relegation, it's a tough old one, this. I mean, it's interesting, before the season started, when you saw predictions, Ollie, from people, Robbie Savage works with us, and I remember him saying any one of 13 could go down, which I thought was maybe a slight touch of fence sitting. Not so much now, really, when you look at it. I mean, I look at it and think, well, not really. I mean, you look at the likes of, you know, Hull and Leicester and Sunderland, who put in a good performance, all obviously capable of being dragged in. West Ham, Stoke, you know, now they look like they've got something about them. Burnley the favourites, then QPR, Crystal Palace, West Brom, and then come Newcastle. I tend to think it's probably, you know, there are four, maybe five teams who are capable of going down now. Burnley look like they haven't got enough goals. We've talked about QPR. Crystal Palace, you know, if the honeymoon's already over with Neil Warnock, then I'm not sure what the marriage is going to be like from here on in. And then you've got the West Brom and Newcastle, who you're never quite sure what you're going to get week to week.
I think if you look at the table now, I wouldn't think Everton are in the slightest danger. I know they're
not.
I don't think Stoke are in the slightest danger. I think their performances are those of a team who are slowly improving, even though they've, you know, it's whatever it is, 8 points from seven games. It's, you know, they haven't really hit the ground running, but they do to me look like an improving team. So Palace, I would think, would be all right-ish. Sunderland likewise, Hull likewise. I think Leicester have started well, and Villa have certainly started well. So I would perhaps come down to three from five now.
It's
West Brom, Newcastle, Burnley, QPR,
and Palace, yeah.
Perhaps Leicester, I don't know. Yeah. Newcastle, make no mistake, I mean, it's not just a slow start to the season. They have been in awful form since Boxing Day. I can't remember, is it five wins this calendar year so far? It's not even as if, you could go back further, you could say that their form over 2 years has been dreadful, apart from a really strong spell last autumn. I've looked at it over, I think it's about 64, 66 games, something like that. Their form is awful. And that probably ceases to be form, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does, yeah.
It's a team that is, you know, has perhaps punched above its weight at times over the past few years, and has had very, very, very long spells of punching below its weight. And I worry about Newcastle. I don't... It would make me sound like somebody who's got a sort of bloodthirstiness where managers are concerned, which is definitely not normally the case. But as with QPR, I just look at Newcastle and I think they don't look like turning it around under this manager. So it's a difficult one. I think there's a sort of sense of, I don't know whether it's more complacency rather than loyalty from the Newcastle board, but it doesn't seem like there's, you know, necessarily the sense of urgency that you might think there would be. And I think, look at Burnley, I think, you know, they're a team who did amazingly well to come up. I think it would be forgivable if they finished bottom with hardly any points, because they are, they're almost not playing the same game as everybody else financially, including the other teams that came up with them. So it was nice just to see them get that late equaliser last week to get a welcome point, because I do think they'll struggle for points, and probably everyone is worth treasuring.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah, it's amazing. I've just been looking at that Newcastle record. I've looked back to this, you know, this calendar year a few times, but I've never really looked back as far as you've said. I mean, you're looking at it from, say, November 2012. You're right. I mean, there was just that one spell between, say, I think it was, you know, October of 2013 through till Boxing Day, basically, where they had a really good run, which you think, oh yeah, that's a really good run, but that's only 2 months, really, isn't it? Yeah. And there's only 2 months when you're right. It's amazing how bad they've been for so long, really. I mean, and that run that they're in now is, you're right, you know, five wins. It's just well, it's bordering on catastrophic, isn't it? And their away form, especially, has been absolutely dreadful, hasn't it? Since around the new year, and particularly from March of this year. So, yeah, fascinating. We'll all unfurl as the season goes on. Ollie, thanks for your time today. Really, really enjoyed having a chat with you. If you want to follow Ollie on Twitter, nearly 300,000 of you are, but if you're one of the ones who aren't, at Oliver K Times is the Twitter address. You can download this podcast at the Football Writers website, which is footballwriters.co.uk. It's also available at williamhill.com/podcasts. You can find it on audioboom.com, and if you subscribe via iTunes, you get all of our football podcasts sent straight to your phone, your device, or your laptop. Thanks very much for listening, and thanks to Ollie. If you're having a bet on any of the markets that we've discussed, then very best of luck.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.